court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Welcome to Court Appointed, 2D's perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Michael Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Tommy, I can't help but notice there's somebody else in the room today.
Yes, it's a very special guest. Someone that I know quite well. I've known her pretty much her whole life.
That's me.
That's you.
Hey, Riley.
Hello.
Riley Smurl of Still Buffering fame.
The famous podcaster, Riley Smurl.
Hi, everybody.
We feel privileged to have you here amongst us as we're just mere dudes.
Thanks for joining us on the show today.
Of course.
The reason we brought you on the show today is because we're talking about something that is near and dear to you.
And what is that?
Hamilton.
Of course it's near and dear to me. It's my favorite thing.
Hamilton.
I don't think that's from the show. I don't know where that's from.
Yeah, that's the new song. That's the hidden song. If you listen long enough to the soundtrack, it comes up at the end. Hamilton, Hamilton, we are Hamilton.
Everyone's Hamilton? You said we are Hamilton.
We're
so everyone's
all
Hamilton?
A little bit Hamilton.
All right.
You sound like an Oompa Loompa when you did that.
A little bit.
Oompa Loompa Doompa Dee Doo. Here is what Hamilton will do for you.
Great job. Great job, Dad.
Thank you.
So, Tommy, it was your idea to bring Riley here today. Why did you want to bring her here?
Why did I want to bring her here?
Well, aside from the fact that we like to hang out with Riley because she's lots of fun to hang out with.
And she's my favorite one of my three daughters. Don't tell your sisters out there, Riley.
Yeah, they're going to listen to this and get mad.
They don't listen to this.
Bet they will.
You think so?
I'll tell them to.
No, they'll do it for you?
No, I'll tell them to so they can hear you saying that I'm your favorite.
Oh, hey, Sydney, it. Taylor, listen to this podcast. Dad says I'm the favorite.
Well, we have to keep that a secret, so just don't tell them about this episode. This will be the secret episode.
Even though you're putting it out there just the same as all the other ones?
Well, yeah, we'll call it a secret.
The secret Hamilton episode?
The secret Hamilton episode, starring special guest star Riley Smurl.
Tommy Smurl's favorite daughter.
Yes, that's right. That's the secret. Now, Riley, I suppose you're wondering why we have you here.
I mean, you already told me, but
oh.
Yes, I am wondering.
Well, it's because we're talking about Hamilton, and we know how much you love that show. You have, you know, you got all these pictures on your cell phone and around your room of Lin-Manuel Miranda. You met him personally. Mm-hmm. He introduced you as his friend.
Yes.
He introduced you to D-Wade.
Yes.
He introduced you to Al Pacino.
Yes.
He introduced you to Christian Slater.
Yes.
And he introduced you as his friend.
Yes.
So even though I've never met him and I've never gotten to go see the show, I feel like through proximity, I too am friends with Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Yes, you are, Dad.
Thank you. You've granted me a share of your friendship.
Just a record, I kind of feel that way too.
Well, see, we're all just glomming off of your friendship there.
It's so, okay.
So you are a resident Hamilton expert.
Okay.
So what we wanted to discuss is Hamilton and the law, because there are a lot of actual law things, not just musical dancing around things.
I like the musical dancing around things.
Well, I know, but when we want to tie all that together. See, you are an expert about the musical dancing around things, and Michael is our expert on the law, and I'm the expert of nothing, but I can sit here and babble in between.
Well, all right.
Well, I think what you're basically wanting to do is to introduce Riley as an expert witness.
Yes, Your Honor, I would like to introduce, call to the stand, Riley Smurl as an expert witness about all things Hamilton.
Well, the musical.
The musical.
Hamilton. The musical.
Not the person.
There's certain things that you have to do before you can admit an expert witness. Are you prepared to make that expert witness proffer today before the podcast?
As long as she has to answer those questions.
Oh, okay. Well, this is basically called the Daubert Standard to admit an expert. This is what you do in court according to the federal rules. Rule 702, testimony by expert witnesses.
Uh-huh.
So before we're going to allow you to testify about Hamilton, the musical.
Okay.
we need to make sure you're actually an expert.
Okay.
The first question is, what is the expert's scientific, technical, or other specialized knowledge that will help the trier of fact to understand the evidence to determine a fact and issue? So what would you say your expert, technical, or other specialized knowledge is in with regards to Hamilton the musical?
I know all the songs.
Well, how about your 15-year theater background?
Okay.
So you're very good at plays and studying them and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
So you,
that too, I guess.
Yeah, so you know those things. You're an expert in theater.
Okay. That then. He answered it for me.
Yeah, I mean, he's...
I'm representing her.
You're representing Riley?
Yes. Sorry. You got the short end of that stick.
The second standard is that your testimony is going to be based on sufficient facts or data. So you've actually seen the play Hamilton.
I have.
And I can vouch because the wall between the shower and the living room is not that thick. I can vouch that she knows it word for word.
I do know it word for word. Every word of the whole show.
Every word of the whole show. Some of the words we don't even want her to know, but she knows them.
I don't say those words.
I know. You self-censor.
I do. That's
very good. You're a good girl, Riley.
Well, I think that
always
actually,
said that about you.
That actually might be standard D, that the expert has reliably applied the principles and methods to the facts of the case. So the fact that she's seen it and she's applied those by singing in the shower very loudly.
Very
to,
loudly.
To Hamilton. So.
Well, all right.
All right. Well, I think she probably qualifies. All that needs to be done is somebody needs to make a motion to admit her as an expert.
Your Honor, I make a motion to admit. Can they see me raising my hand up?
No, they can't.
That's not how it works.
Should I put my hand down then?
Why do you have the number one sign up?
Well, that's what I think of you. You're number one, pal.
That's not how you usually do number one, by the way.
You do number one standing up, don't you?
Well, you're sitting down.
So, they can't see me. You didn't have to say that.
So based on this expert witness proffer, I think we can admit Riley as an expert today on Hamilton. So.
Yay,
we won the first part of it.
Yay.
You get to stay.
Yay, I was hoping I would.
I was too.
I was going to be really sad if I didn't.
If Michael dismissed you, that was going to be very sad for me.
He's going to have to walk home.
I couldn't dismiss you. You're my favorite niece.
Yay, I'm everyone's favorite.
That's right.
This is the episode I'm going to tell everyone to listen to.
Everyone's favorite niece and daughter, Riley Smurl.
Got to tell all my relatives to listen to this episode.
That's right.
We are going to have to make this a secret one. Everyone's going to be really mad at us. Well, it probably would have been a really short podcast, though, if she hadn't actually qualified as an expert.
Yeah, because
it'd
just
be
you and me.
Huh? It'd already be over.
Yeah, that's right, because it'd just be two of us, and we don't know nothing.
Well, denied. Well, that's going to do it for this episode.
Well, we had a good plan. You just ruined it.
In the play, there's some different historical things that are brought up.
Mm-hmm.
One is, and most of the things are kind of, I guess, maybe is it in the second act, after kind of the war part when things have settled down a little bit. That's more what we're going to focus on, because that's more like the legal type stuff.
Okay.
There was the murder trial.
Yes. Which is only mentioned in one line of the show.
And what is that line?
Gentlemen of the jury, I'm curious. Bear with me. Are you aware that we're making history? This is the first murder trial of our brand new nation.
That's right. And that's what's so relevant about that.
Yes.
It was the first murder trial of the brand new nation. Not only that, it was sort of an O.J. Simpson type murder trial. He was part of, shall we say, a dream team of defense attorneys that defended Levi Weeks against this charge of murder.
And one of them was Aaron Burr, if I am not mistaken.
You are correct. The other guy was Brockholst Livingston. While he was not as famous as the other two, he was no less prominent, would later be appointed to the U.S. Supreme Court. And I think that Jimmy Buffett sings a song about him on a Livingston Saturday night, but I'm not sure. That may not be him.
He's not in a musical, so I don't really know anything about him.
Oh, you only know famous people that were in musicals.
Yes.
Can you rhyme anything with Brockhoist?
I don't think that's a rhymeable word.
I don't think it is either.
It's one of those like orange, purple.
And Zuckerberg.
No, you proved you can rhyme Zuckerberg.
He did that.
Yeah, so he actually was one of the defense attorneys in the first murder trials in our new nation. Pretty interesting. That actually, the Well, because it's called the Manhattan Well Murder Trial, I think is the name they call it, is actually still, you can still go visit it. It's in Manhattan.
Huh.
And it's said to be haunted by the ghost of Elma Sands.
Elma Sands, the victim?
Yes, the victim. She was drowned in the well. Her body was found there. And there was conflicting details as to who might have done it. She
Plot had twist. Several
suitors.
It was Hamilton.
No, it wasn't Hamilton. He didn't have anything to do with it.
Plot twist.
He was one of the... You can't start rumors about a dead guy. That wouldn't be good.
No.
That was a joke.
No, but Aaron Burr, the reason that he joined in on the case was because he owned the building where this well was, where the body was found.
Huh. I didn't know that.
That is correct. That is a true statement. That's not just one of those ones I made up, like a lot of them I do.
Yeah, the place is actually COS Clothing Store now. It's on 129 Spring Street in New York. Huh. It's in Soho. So you can go in there and buy yourself some clothes and see a murder well.
See a murder well?
Got to go visit that.
Yeah.
What kind of coinage do you throw in a murder well? What kind of wishes do you make in that?
I don't know.
Not be murdered or to murder? One of the two.
I don't think you throw a wish coin in a murder well. That's
you
bad
don't
news.
Think so?
No.
They'd throw it back at you?
Yeah. Or it'd be like one of those things where you...
You know what that is. That's a deep thought.
A deep thought? I think if you make a wish in a murder well, that basically it's one of those scenarios where your wishes, they come true, but in a way you really don't want them to.
Oh, kind of like Rod Serling-like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
So the other interesting case that Hamilton was a part of, which actually isn't mentioned in the musical, so
It's not mentioned?
It's not.
Why didn't they sing about that?
Well, probably because the name of the case was Rutgers v. Waddington. This is the case where Alexander Hamilton represented Mrs. Rutgers, and basically there was this thing called the Trespass Act, and it held that British subjects were not able to essentially have any kind of property rights with regards to things. And Hamilton argued that the Treaty of 1783 by the United States invalidated this state law. And what it did is, and he won that case, and what it did basically, it set up the premise that the federal rules overrule the state rules. So it's kind of a landmark case.
Well, the other thing it did, it also helped develop in the new country the idea of due process. Because a lot of people, because these people were British sympathizers, they didn't even want them to be heard. They just wanted it to be ruled against them. But he sort of pushed the envelope on that. Actually, as far as they called him a traitor, because he represented several of these Tories on these claims. And they said, well, you know, the right thing is, no matter who they are, they deserve a fair trial.
Right.
So he helped establish due process in the United States.
Did you know anything about Rutgers v. Waddington, Riley?
I did not. This is all news to me.
It's all news?
Yeah.
Do you think it could be part of a song somehow?
Somewhere in there. Got to figure it out. But somewhere in there, I think it could be.
You think you could give that a shot?
I don't think so. I think that's too tough for me.
Not just off the cuff?
I can't. I need preparation time.
You need Michael to give you a beat? He's good at dropping a beat.
I think that's too much pressure for me. I usually perform under comfortable circumstances. I have some time to prepare.
This is a comfortable circumstance. It's the basement of your sister's house.
I didn't have enough time. I didn't have enough preparation.
And we both think you're our favorite, so you ought to be real comfortable.
So I can't mess that up by messing up that song.
All right. We'll let you off the hook.
The other thing that is kind of interesting was the extortion where Alexander Hamilton was being blackmailed.
Yeah.
That's a bit more than one line, I think, in the...
It is. There are several songs about that.
And he had a bit more than one line about that himself.
He did. He did at that.
Mm-hmm.
So what can you tell, as our resident Hamilton expert, what can you tell us about this illicit affair?
Basically, all it describes in the musical.
Yes, you 16-year-old. What can you tell us about this illicit affair?
She's an expert.
Excuse me? I thought I was here to be your expert,
well,
Mr.
You are.
Smurl.
You are, Miss Smurl.
Let me do my thing.
Do your thing, baby. Do your thing.
So basically, all it says in the musical is that his wife goes out of town with her family for the summer, And he has to stay in town because he's trying to get his plan for a new form of government to go, or to get congressional approval. So he stays home to work on it. And then while his wife is gone, he is seduced by Mariah Reynolds. And then he gets a letter in the mail from her husband and says, if you don't pay me money, I will tell everyone about it. But you can keep seeing my wife. You just have to pay me money.
So that's kind of blackmail or extortion, I think.
Right.
So extortion in general is trying to obtain property from another without their consent by threatened force, violence, or fear under the color of official right.
I would say that is very fitting.
Yeah,
yeah,
it is. But there was some controversy about whether or not this actually took place, though.
Well, that and the fact that there was controversy as to whether the two, Mr. and Mrs. Reynolds, were in this in cahoots. Did he have her go do this to set him up? Did he actually just stumble upon it and decide to take advantage of it, or what? Because they could have been, you know, like grifters.
Yeah.
As described in the musical, I would say he told her to do it and then blackmailed Hamilton. But that is just my assumption.
That's what I kind of got from the musical as well when I listened to it.
Mm-hmm.
I've listened to the musical about 27 times, so I'm not quite an expert, but I'm pretty close. I know the songs.
Yeah.
To have Washington on your side. Is that what it is?
That's all you know.
That's it. That's about all I know. That's a pretty good guy to have on your side if you're going to have one guy. Because it did seem like he didn't get along with very many people.
No.
It seemed like everybody was against him. Everything he did, he was against everybody. The only guy that liked him was George Washington.
He was kind of a hothead, seemed like.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think he was a little bit aristocratic, too.
So what was the other possible scandalous thing about that extortion?
Well, there was the other possible scandalous thing was it was rumored that the reason he wrote this, how many pages was this thing, Riley?
90-some?
93 or something like that? 93,
95, something like that.
That he wrote that was outlining his affair.
Yeah, the Reynolds pamphlet, which was just basically detailing everything that happened because he was worried someone would accuse him of treason. And he would rather be known as an adulterer than someone who was betraying his country.
Well, he felt like that would have much more serious consequences to future political endeavors, whereas otherwise he just had his wife to contend with. So he writes up, in those days they didn't have computers, so he hand wrote a 93-page pamphlet.
And published it.
For the world to read.
Mm-hmm.
About, no, I wasn't committing treason. I wasn't using government funds for my own good.
I was just cheating on my wife.
Yeah,
cheating on my
wife. Simple run-of-the-mill cheating on your wife for money.
Yeah.
But it said that, you know, the old saying, thou doth protest too much. He wrote this to say, here it all is, so let's forget about the other thing. Well, there are those that say that was all a cover-up between him and James Reynolds, that he was actually using the funds to do that, and that he felt it was better to go ahead and do this, and everybody would jump on that. And they, when some of the letters that they offered as ones that he had written to Maria Reynolds, they didn't look like anything else that he had written, and they asked him about it. They said, well, how come these letters don't match? He said, well, I used a disguised hand to write them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Why would he use a disguised hand, a guy that writes that much? I don't know.
Yeah,
does he write like he's running out of time?
Why does he write like he's running out of time?
I may never know.
He's not going to miss his shot.
That's true.
That's right. But the way they wrote in that day, though, was so different from anything that you see now. Like, here's like an excerpt. This is from the extortion note that he first received. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but that's good. Part of it. He says, and this was James Reynolds writing to Alexander Hamilton.
Back in 1791.
Yes, and he's saying that, paraphrasing the beginning of it, he's saying, there's nothing that can be done to resolve how my heart is broken, because I will never win back her love. She has given it to you. So he says, I have considered on the matter seriously. I have this proposal to make to you. Give me the sum of $1,000, and I will leave the town and take my daughter with me and go where my friend shan't hear from me, and leave her to yourself to do for her as you think proper. I hope you won't think my request is in view of making me satisfaction for the injury done me, for there is nothing that you can do will compensate for it. Yeah, except $1,000 there, bud.
The one in the musical is not as kind. It is much more.
Is it harsher?
It is harsher. It is harsher. Very much.
What does he basically say? You're going to give me the money or else?
Yes. Yes. I'm trying to think of the lyrics right now as we're talking. Yes, it is.
Yeah, because he gave him that. So he gave him the $1,000. Keep his mouth shut. Mm-hmm. Well, then they decided that every once in a while, Hamilton would still meet up with Maria Reynolds. Mm-hmm. And then another note would come along. Oh, I need 30 more bucks. I need 100 more bucks. I need 20 more bucks. Each visit seemed to be attached with a dollar show. That's why I said, you know, either the two of them were in it together, or Hamilton was really funneling this money into this business that James Reynolds was in, which was buying up soldiers' pensions and disability claims.
Right.
That's what he was doing with the money. They'd be in a bad way, didn't have money. And he'd come along and say, here's 50 bucks. Now sign over your rights to this, and they would collect people's disability checks and stuff.
There's a lot of businesses out there that kind of do similar things, not necessarily with pension checks, but with other things.
Yeah, I don't know if that's legal or not. I don't know how that works.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is. I think I know they do that with things like lawsuits. Sometimes if somebody has a lawsuit that's isn't quite settled yet, this company will come in and say basically ask the attorney what they think the lawsuit's worth, and then they'll give them a fraction of that right now in order for them to sign over anything they get from the case in the future.
Yeah, but maybe government things like pensions and disability claims, because this was coming from the government, maybe that's not legal to do that. I don't know.
No, I can definitely see a difference between those two things. Yeah, but I'm just saying that business model is still kind of like around. Yeah, the whole thing sounds a little fishy, but I don't know. I mean, I guess if you were being blackmailed for something like that, would you just want to get out in the open and rip the Band-Aid off, or would you want to try to keep paying money?
I would want to write a 93-page pamphlet.
I don't understand why he waited until after he paid all the money.
Yeah, I mean,
if you're being threatened, why not just put it out there so you don't have to pay anything?
Well, and you've always got that hanging over your head. But I think that it's interesting that when they arrested this James Reynolds because they caught him on those cases, those fraud cases or whatever, where he was buying those things up. First thing he did is call for Hamilton to come visit him in prison. Hamilton wouldn't go see him. Well, so the next thing he does then is he talks to James Monroe and one other guy, and he tells them about it and says that he has proof. Well, those two guys go and meet with Hamilton, and so they say, well, you know, this is what he's accusing you of. So that's how it all came about. And he thought they were going to be quiet about it. Mm-hmm. They were going to keep their mouth shut and not say anything until it got to Thomas Jefferson. Mm-hmm. Thomas Jefferson or his clerk were the ones that actually fed it to like a New York gossip magazine.
Yeah.
And that's how it got out. They evidently had what's that New York one that has all the juicy gossip in it?
New York Post.
Yeah, they had the New York Post, I guess, back then or something. And Paris Hilton was having a slow day. So,
do you know who the founder of the New York Post was?
No.
Who? Alexander Hamilton.
Are you serious?
I am serious.
He started his own gossip rag and it went on about him?
Founder of the New York Post.
I never knew that.
Yep.
Didn't read that anywhere.
It's a line in the musical.
It is?
Yes.
Hmm. Well, there you go.
Yeah. Of course, now we call it the Old York Post. But
the Old York Post? The old New York Post.
Yeah. Well, old New York Post.
It's still New York.
It's still New York.
Yeah.
It was once New Amsterdam.
It was New Amsterdam.
Is that in the musical?
No, that's in a They Might Be Giants song.
Peter Stuyvesant. That's what, when you hear the term Bedford Stuy, that's a short for Stuyvesant. It was Peter Stuyvesant was one of the Dutch settlers there that helped form New York from New Amsterdam.
Interesting.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, I thought we were talking about Hamilton, so I just kind of zoned out whenever you started talking about something other than
that. I just thought I'd splash a little knowledge on you.
Bedford Stuy?
Yeah. You ever heard of, Taylor talks about that, hanging out over in Bedford Stuy.
Oh. No, I don't know that.
No.
Yeah, that's one of the areas in New York.
Oh. Because, you know all the hip places in New York.
That's right. Taylor you tells me about so all those hipster places.
You visit there so much and love it so much.
No, I don't. I get overwhelmed there.
Well, it's just kind of like how you're Lin-Manuel's friend by proxy through Riley, you're hip in New York through proxy by Taylor.
That's right. So you're just and I'm a doctor through Sydney.
Yep. That one's a little out there.
How about, because I stayed at a Holiday Inn Express last night. Does that make me a doctor?
Maybe.
What?
You didn't see those commercials, I guess.
No.
I saw you at your house last night, though. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm pretty sure you were at home last night.
You had potato soup last night.
Yeah.
It was all just a thing. I was just saying that.
Oh, you were doing a bit?
I was doing a bit.
You got it. Everyone has to understand the bit to make a bit, Dad.
Oh, man.
No one understood your bit.
This three-way thing isn't working very good here.
You know, the thing is, I actually understood your bit, but I just jumped on Riley's side to make to have
fun. Oh, Okay. Thanks a lot.
Sorry, partner.
Thanks a lot, pal. I remember that. Leave me hanging.
So one of the other things we wanted to talk about in Hamilton, which happens a couple times, is dueling.
Yeah.
They were dueling Daltons.
Nope, not from a musical.
No Eagles. No Eagle Zone.
Oh.
Only Hamilton's.
That should have been a play.
The Eagles?
The whole Desperado album. It lays out like a play, the whole album from beginning to end. You could use every song in it.
Hey, Dad.
Huh?
We're talking about Hamilton right now. Oh,
sorry, I digressed.
This is really important.
Thank you for keeping me on track, Riley. We need you in here more often.
This is a really important topic for me.
Oh, well, that's true. I didn't mean to take away from it.
So what can you tell us about dueling in Hamilton?
I know there's this whole song called The Ten Duel Commandments.
There is?
Yes.
Can you sing it for us?
I'm going to try to think of the Ten Duel Commandments as I'm going through the song. Number one, the challenge demands satisfaction. If they apologize, no need for further action.
I can't get no satisfaction.
Not exactly.
What Mick Jagger was singing about later on?
No.
Oh. Okay.
Number two is, if you don't grab a friend that's your second, your lieutenant when there's reckoning to be reckoned. Number three, I don't know. Oh, God. It's hard when there's no music. That's not the right music. Hold on. I will. I know.
Have your seconds meet face to face.
Negotiate a peace or negotiate a time and place. This is commonplace, especially between recruits. Most disputes die and no one shoots. Number four, last chance to negotiate. Send in your second, see if they can set the record straight, I think.
Makes sense.
Number five
golden rings.
I don't think that is the... I don't think that is... That is the fifth.
Four shooting pistols, three
silver bullets, two swords,
and a dead Hamilton laying on the ridge.
I was actually wrong. Number four is time to get some pistols and a doctor on site.
Yeah, it's almost what I was saying.
You pay him in advance, you treat him with civility, you have him turn around so he can have deniability.
Oh, don't watch us, just turn around after the shooting. Yeah,
right. Number five is duel before the sun is in the sky. Pick a place to die where it's high and dry. Number six, leave a note for your next of kin. Tell them where you've been. Pray that hell or heaven lets you in. Seven, confess your sins, ready for the moment of adrenaline when you finally face your opponent. Number eight is your last chance to negotiate. Send in your second, see if they can set the record straight. Number nine is look them in the eye and no higher. Summon all the courage you acquire. Then count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 paces fire.
And number 10 is?
Count 10 paces.
Boom. Well, and dueling, for whatever reason, why it seems so weird now, was not uncommon.
No, it was a huge problem, actually.
They said that Alexander Hamilton actually had almost dueled with James Monroe. Said that they went back and forth for a year. And you know who James Monroe's second was that helped settle the thing so they didn't ever actually shoot?
I do not.
Got a guess?
I only know because you told me earlier, but I'll let you answer.
Aaron Burr.
What?
That's right.
I had no idea. I had no prior knowledge. He negotiated peace.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you did because I told you, but you wouldn't have known.
You have that one.
But he negotiated the peace to let them both. They had to gentlemanly get off the hook. Neither one wanted to be seen as a wimp. That was a problem. Right. Once somebody issues a duel, and they never come right out and say, "I'm going to duel you." They have these terms that they use that are terms of being a gentleman. And they can be interpreted different ways. Sometimes duels never took place because somebody didn't realize the guy was offering to duel them. They didn't, for whatever reason, you just don't come right out and say it.
It's like, oh, it's duel. No, I thought you wanted to go see a play. I completely misunderstood. I was standing at the theater with a ticket and I was waiting for you.
I would entreat you to join me on an expedition towards singularity.
what? You know, I'm sure that wasn't that. But, they would use roundabout phrases. So a lot of times they'd go back and forth. And then sometimes they would drag on for so long, people would forget what the original affront was about that caused them to want a duel.
Yeah.
So anyway, Aaron Burr stepped in and finally negotiated this thing to where they both dropped it and they both got out of it with their honor intact. And this was like 5 or 6 years prior to Aaron Burr then turning around and shooting him.
Well, in the musical, there's actually 2 duels. Did you know that, Tommy?
Yes.
Three.
Oh. I knew there was 2. I did not know there was 3.
There's one between Lee and John Lawrence.
Oh.
There's one between Philip Hamilton and George Eaker. And then there's one between Hamilton and Aaron Burr.
I forgot about the Lee one. Because that's the one where Washington gets mad at him for not letting him fight his own fight or something like that, right?
He gets mad at him for defending him.
Yes.
He said he's not a man in need of defending.
And then did Philip Hamilton's duel amount to he was defending his father's honor?
Yes. There was a speaker at his college, King's College, and he
which
was...
later became?
Queen's College.
No. Wrong answer.
You Columbia. Told me. That's right, Columbia.
Columbia.
And
King's College, that's where he went.
And George Eaker was the speaker, and he called Hamilton basically out and said he was an awful person.
And so Philip stood up to him. He was 20 years old.
Yeah, Philip went to him and was like, you don't get to talk to my dad that way.
And then, at this point, he proceeded to listen to the worst advice that his father had ever given him.
He went to his father and said, I got in a duel. They don't exactly teach us the subject in boarding school. What do I do? And his father said, take my pistols, and when it gets to 10, shoot your gun up in the sky. And he says, well, what if he decides to shoot? Then I'm a goner. And Hamilton says, no, he'll follow suit if he's truly a man of honor. To take someone's life, that is something you can't shake. So he thinks his dad is right.
Well, that's pretty cool that his dad spoke in rhyme like that.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I don't think he actually did.
Oh, that wasn't a direct quote?
But Lynn Hamilton did.
Oh, okay.
Hamilton, if you will.
Hamilton.
Yes.
And what was that?
So the son then dies, too.
That term was called DeLope?
A DeLope.
And that basically, a DeLope is whenever you're having a duel and you don't actually take your shot.
Don't take your shot. Take your shot.
Not the lyrics, but go ahead.
Or you don't take the shot, you actually shoot it in the ground.
Right. So he was advising him to do that. And supposedly, when you did that, you would shoot your shot. Yeah, he mentions in his lines in the song, shoot it into the air.
When the time comes, fire a weapon in the air. That'll put an end to the whole affair.
Right. So in other words, like you aim straight up in the air and you shoot up in the air and you're saying, look, I'm not going to shoot you.
Right.
But what they said actually in a DeLope, the way it was supposed to work is you were supposed to turn around and fire your gun into the ground. And that was more your admission of, I'm not going to shoot you, put it in the ground. Now, the other guy, he had 2 choices after that. He could stand there, and he could also fire into the ground, and you both defended your honor, and everything was okay, and you walk away. Mm-hmm. Or he'd go ahead and take the shot and shoot you.
Yeah.
And it was, in those cases, usually if the guy looped and you shot him, you'd get charged with murder, and it was considered dishonorable. It was in bad form.
Yeah.
Bad form, you shot him.
Fire your shot in the ground, and that way your honor will still be sound.
There you go. You just learned your new line to Hamilton, too.
That's right, Hamilton, too.
Shoot your shot into the sky and kiss your own sweet ass goodbye.
I don't think that's right.
I can tell you this. If I turn around and look, because, in other words, once you fire your shot, you're at the mercy of this other guy. And this other guy can stand there, take his time, take aim, and then boom. Well, I can tell you this. If I fired mine in the ground or in the sky or whatever, and I see this guy start taking aim, he's going to have to shoot me in the back because I'm not going to stand there and just let him have at it. He's going to have to hit a moving target.
Yeah,
I'm going to be running around going, I didn't mean it.
I think the better policy would be not to duel.
Yeah.
One of the other things about it is there was a lot of dispute about who shot first and how exactly everything went down, because they say that, in the song they refer to Hamilton having shot in the air.
Yeah.
One of the witnesses that was there said that he aimed high and wide. So he actually shot in Burr's direction, but he shot high and wide. Now, to me, that means goes off into the trees somewhere, nowhere near him.
Right.
But someone else described it as the shot grazed Burr's ear. Hmm. Now, you could say, yeah, I was trying to miss him. I just grazed his ear. You got to be a hell of a shot if you're going to miss somebody on purpose and graze his ear.
Yeah.
That's some pretty good shooting. And so they said that if he had actually done that, Burr may not have recognized that he was not trying to kill him. Now, Burr was well known for being a poor marksman.
That's a line in the show, too.
Oh, what is that line?
My fellow soldiers will tell you I'm a terrible shot.
Yeah, and he was well known for being a terrible shot. Now, they also theorized that it's possible that he also was going to waste his shot and not actually shoot him, but he was such a bad shot that he hit him. But he would never admit that. He would never tell anybody, well, I was trying to miss him, but I hit him, because that wouldn't look good on your honor either. You're such a bad shot.
Right.
There's still a lot of mystery and intrigue that surrounds it. And they were not. I mean, Aaron Burr was the sitting vice president at the time that this took place.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of our presidents or vice presidents that had been involved in that. James Monroe, like we said, was offered a duel with that. Abraham Lincoln was actually involved in a duel once. And Andrew Jackson, who was like the 13th president or something, he was involved in like 18 duels. He went around shooting all kinds of people.
That's crazy.
He was a shoot-em-up kind of guy. I guess that's how you get rid of the opposition or something.
Dick Cheney shot a man in the face.
And lived to tell about it. He said sorry afterwards. He said, oops.
My bad.
You got to watch those vice presidents and presidents. They go around and just shoot you, and they're allowed to, because he was tried. Aaron Burr was tried in New Jersey and New York. Was that sung about?
Yeah, they decide in Hamilton's son's duel and Hamilton's duel to duel in New Jersey, even though they were residents of New York.
Yeah, they were the exact same place.
As they say in the show, everything is legal in New Jersey. So I guess New Jersey was a lot more lenient when it came to laws than New York.
Weehawken or something like that. Weehawken, New Jersey. Weehawken, New Jersey. And they had the duel there. Both of them were there, and both of them met their demise there.
I think it was the same doctor, too.
It was. Was it?
Yeah.
That's not in the show, but it was.
Hmm. And so they found him guilty of murder in New Jersey, and New York likewise found him guilty of murder, but they couldn't arrest him because he was a sitting vice president. So he decided to cool off, and I guess people weren't as mobile then as they are now, so he took off down to Georgia, stay with a friend of his down in Georgia, and I guess they didn't really have the resources to send anybody down to go get him.
Yeah, that's actually where Charlie Daniels got his inspiration for The Devil Went Down to Georgia, because he was really not a fan of Burr.
Oh, really?
No.
Wow. Well, that's an interesting fact. You know, I actually
totally made that up.
Well, I really thought that was real.
That could be true, because I saw Charlie Daniels perform in Georgia, and he sang that song.
That makes sense then.
Yeah, it's got to be. Got to be a fact.
It all ties together.
No, wait. Where does that connect?
He was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind. He was looking to make a deal.
I think they were all, they were all in the room.
Where it happened.
They were all in the room where it happened. The room where it happened.
The room where it happened, what is that about?
The room where it happened is basically Aaron Burr complaining about the fact that he is not in the room where James Madison, Thomas Jefferson, and Hamilton made the decision to put the nation's capital in Virginia, which is now D.C., where it was in New York, so that Hamilton would get approval on his new financial plan. And he's basically saying, like, no one will ever know what they talked about in there. We just know that it happens.
In the room where it happened. And that was in a meatpacking plant, wasn't it?
Hmm?
Well, they said that there was sausage being made there or something.
That was a form of... That was an expression.
It was an expression?
A form of speech.
Well, it always makes me hungry when they sing about that.
No, that was just... You don't really know what goes on behind the scenes.
Oh. So it's like watching the sausage being made? Is that what we're saying?
Right.
Oh, I thought there was actually...
You don't know what goes into it. You just know it happens.
Yeah, and you don't want to see sausage made either. That's kind of the thing, too, because it's kind of gross. Yeah.
So these three guys made that important decision to trade it off those two factors, and Hamilton then set up the First National Bank and helped was the was a champion of a centralized, strong centralized government for our nation.
That's why he wrote all the Federalist Papers.
Trying to get that done. And he actually outlined the three branches of government, the legislative, the executive, and the judicial branches, and the Congress and Senate, as well as the president. Now, he had different titles for him. He also thought that the president, when elected, should be elected for a life term. And he also thought the Senate should be all lords, basically the rich people, and they should be appointed for life. And it's just a congressman would get reelected every 3 years.
Yeah, well, that's kind of similar to how it's set up in England.
Yeah, but I think it's funny because it is all rich people in the Senate now. If you're not a millionaire, you can't run for those jobs. So in a way, it came true, even though that's not a requirement. You ever see anybody run for one of those places that's not a millionaire?
Not unless it's some sort of movie.
Yeah, in a movie, one of those oddball ones. And then they become a cat or something.
Well, Riley, they become a cat?
Or what? A dog? Maybe a dog.
I was about to say something to Riley, then it registered what you just said.
Yeah.
Well, that's a Disney movie. It has something like that.
When does someone run for Congress and then become a cat?
Well, you have Kevin Spacey. He's the president in House of Cards, right? And then he's the cat. He's the dad that becomes a cat in Nine Lives. So it's kind of related.
No, those are two totally different movies, two totally different universes.
Same guy.
No.
I guess if you're a cat and you're going to be in the Senate, you better be an aristocrat.
An aristocrat. That's a movie too. That's a Disney movie.
That's pretty good.
You don't want to be a Democrat.
You said Democrat, and it made me think of Republicats, which is a parody of the musical Cats, all about the Republican influential members of government.
Well, can you sing that one for us too?
No, I don't know that one as well. I just know it's really funny.
Oh, well, we'll have to listen to that sometime. It's, or you can sing it in the shower, and I'll get a good rendition of it.
Mm. Love all those kind of jokes. Love those. Keep those coming, please.
That's why you're my favorite, Riley, because you entertain us so much. Nobody else entertains me in the shower like you do. Mm. I'm glad the walls were no thicker in our house that I can hear you.
Well, good to know that you can hear me.
Yeah, that's right. It's fun.
Mm. So, Riley, what of all the Hamilton songs, what is your favorite from the show?
That is a very hard question. But if I had to pick a favorite, I would say Nonstop, which is the Act One finale, basically talking about how Hamilton just does everything.
That cat is nonstop.
He is nonstop. Martha Washington named her feral tomcat after Alexander Hamilton.
That is a fact.
It's a fact.
It's in the show, and in the show he says that is true.
Oh, I thought it was that is true. I was slightly wrong with my phrasing.
It's pretty much the same thing.
I know. I think probably after my 28th listen, I'll really start to get a bit more on point.
Sinks in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the one that I like best is he's had his fall. He's kind of on the outs in the government. His son has been killed in the duel, and then they have the line in there about if you see him walking down the street, he's facing the unimaginable.
It's quiet uptown. Mm-hmm. That's when he moves the rest of his family uptown.
Yeah, and how does that line go? I know I didn't say it exactly right.
If you see him in the street walking by himself, talking to himself, F pity, he is working through the unimaginable.
Yeah. So
it's
when
a very
you think
sad
about,
song. I don't know why it's your favorite.
Well, I don't know. It's just very touching. I'm always, songs that move me are more than songs I can dance to. There's not ones that move me to dance, but move me emotionally.
Dance you to move?
Move me to dance. Ones that move me to emotionally are I like better than ones that move me to dance.
Hmm. Whenever I see
not that I dance much.
Whenever I
shake around a little bit.
Whenever I see you dancing, I try to move.
Yeah.
You better. I might knock you over.
Well, that's going to bring us to our favorite part of the show.
What's that?
Legal briefs. You're good. You joined in. Yeah,
I joined
good.
In.
We didn't even cue you on that. You did good.
Thanks.
So for everybody that anybody that doesn't know what this part is, this is a part of the show where we bring up some legal terms from the show and we discuss them and see if we can remember what they're about.
See if Tommy learned anything or if he was just sitting here goofing.
So the first one is Daubert standard.
Do you want to take this or should I?
I don't remember this.
That is the quiz that you took at the very beginning
to see if a witness can be entered into testimony as an expert.
As an expert witness. And there's a series of questions that have to be met to see qualify you as an expert.
That's right. I believe it's a federal rule 702, testimony by expert witnesses.
High five.
Yeah.
Good job.
There, that was a good high five.
That was you high-fiving yourself.
I know, your high five didn't register on the Richter scale there.
The next one is Rutgers v. Waddington.
Ooh.
The other murder trial Hamilton helped on?
No, but I'll help you out again, little
buddy.
It
wasn't?
No, it wasn't the murder trial. It was the...
It wasn't the first murder trial I was talking about.
It was the Trespass Act. That he was defending the British sympathizers.
What was the... Oh, there's only one murder trial.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that one was more of a property law, and gotcha. He helped develop the idea of due process.
Okay.
Even those that we don't want to have rights have rights.
Dang those that we don't have rights.
That's right. Those dang redcoats came over here. Oh, I can't say redcoats. That's racist, isn't it?
No, they wore red coats.
They wore red coats.
Oh, okay. So you can call them
red coats. They were literally
now?
Red coats.
So it's all right to call them red coats?
Yeah.
Yes? What?
Okay. I didn't know if that was racist.
Nope. Okay. Not racist. They're red coats.
All right. You never can be too careful these days. There's always somebody waiting to jump up and poke you.
Poke you with their 17th century bayonet.
With their little pokeballs.
The other thing about Rutgers v. Waddington was that it set up the premise that the federal government rules overrule the state rules. So they give deference to that. Which you think about, it's kind of Hamilton's whole thing too, because he wrote the Federalist Papers. He really wanted a strong centralized government. So it's only fitting that that was his argument to begin with in that case.
And we are really lucky this guy came along despite all his faults and flaws.
He was kind of a jerk, but I mean.
He was a jerk to everybody. Nobody really liked him. But he was really intelligent when it came to this, because at the time, our government was floundering financially because of the Revolutionary War we had just fought. We owed all kinds of money to everybody, and we didn't have any way to collect taxes for our government because we didn't have a system in place. Some of the states paid taxes. The other ones, they'd get their bill, and they'd say, I'm not going to send this. I'm not going to pay them. And there was nothing anybody could do about it. So he established this form where it's a... uniform, even though none of us like paying taxes, if we're going to have a government to represent us, we got to do something. So he set all that up. He was a visionary.
The next term is extortion.
It's like getting someone out of, or getting something from someone by using something against them. It's like blackmail.
Blackmail, like having knowledge on them that you use against them.
Yeah, to get something from them, like money.
Money, or get them to do something for you, or a favor, or something like that.
Right.
That's right.
That's right. It's extortion. That was the easy one. Everyone knows what extortion is.
That's right.
And the last one is the Manhattan Well trial.
The first murder
you
one.
You go, girl. You got
okay.
it.
Okay. That was the one I knew.
And what happened?
I don't know.
Baby Jessica fell in the well?
No.
No, that wasn't that. No.
No. There's a haunted well somewhere in New York.
Yeah.
Right?
That's right.
And they were defending Levi Weeks, who was accused of killing Elma Sands.
Yes.
Throwing her in the well. He had supposedly asked her to marry him one day, and then the next day she was dead.
Maybe she said no.
No, she said yes. She was all excited and told all her friends about it.
Oh, then I don't know. I can't solve it.
Nope. It never was solved.
And that was the case at Hamilton and Burr, and... It was the last person of the Dream Team.
That other guy with the funny name.
Brockhurst Livingston.
Yeah.
Ish.
Brockhurst Livingston or something like that. Yeah, that's right.
Something like that.
Yeah. There was a Supreme Court justice that nobody knew about.
Yeah.
He was relatively unimportant. They didn't make a play about him. Nobody sings about him.
Not it's yet.
True. They sing about Burr and Hamilton.
Well, they shot people.
And apparently he was not the guy that Jimmy Buffett wrote about in Livingston Saturday Night.
Probably not.
No. Mm-hmm. Say not.
I think Livingston Saturday Night is about the place called Livingston. It's a town, isn't it?
Livingston, Texas?
Maybe.
Is there a Livingston, Texas?
Maybe.
Livingston something.
There's somebody out there in Texas will have to tell me. Somebody that corrected me about I'm a hog.
Somebody wearing their Tony Llamas.
Tony Llamas, I'm a hog? Is everything out there correct connected to an animal?
Pretty much. unless you're vegan, then it's not.
Unless you're vegan?
So.
They wouldn't let a vegan in Texas.
I'm sure there are vegans in Texas, especially no way. Austin. Yeah. Austin. That's
not with all those cows out there. You got to eat a big old steak to live in Texas or they'll kick you out.
Well, Riley, thanks for being our witness today.
Of course. I'm glad really I could be an expert. It.
You are an expert and you're my favorite daughter.
I know.
So we really appreciate you being here.
You can add this to your CV that you were an expert witness on a podcast.
I did my best.
You did good.
You did a great job.
Thanks, guys.
And I just want to put it on the record. I love you.
Well, thanks, Dad. I love you, too.
There. Now I embarrassed you on a podcast.
Oh, my goodness. All right, everybody.
I'm extorting her.
Yeah,
that we won't edit that part out unless you clean your room.
My room is clean.
Yeah, mostly.
It is.
I got to run the vacuum still.
It's on you.
Okay.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out though, right?
Usually. Good. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I'm just a dude.
Thanks for listening.